Welcome to the Visibility Strategies for Women Entrepreneurs podcast, where we empower female business owners to step boldly into the spotlight and claim the recognition they deserve. I'm your host, Tori Barker. I'm passionate about helping women like you transform your visibility into tangible business success. Each week on this show, we'll dive deep into game-changing strategies, share inspiring success stories from women who've mastered their visibility, and offer practical, actionable advice you can implement immediately. Whether you're just starting your entrepreneurial journey, pivoting your business model, or ready to elevate your existing presence to new heights, you'll discover effective approaches to create exciting opportunities and expand your reach. So let's harness the power of strategic visibility and grow your business together. Welcome to the show. We are back on the show today, and today's guest, we have Ellen with us. Thank you so much for being here on the show. How are you?
I'm great, Tori. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited to jump into our conversation and have you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
It's always such an open-ended question, but I'll always start small and then we'll, I'm sure, broaden it out. But I always start with, I didn't plan on becoming a coach. I had plans on staying in financial services until I met a gentleman by the name of Bob Proctor. And I was fortunate to work with him while I was in that profession. And then right time, right place, it was just the opportunity to be mentored and trained by him and Sandy Gallagher. And I thought, of course, this makes perfect sense. So let's completely change the direction of what I'm doing. But what I've learned and understand now is that I get to help people who are younger versions of me and older versions of me.
I love that. It's always, there's a quote I always remember, and I can't remember exactly, but it's something like, help somebody who's been in your shoes or who's one step behind you. And it's always like lend that hand out so that you can, you know, help your younger self or older self or, you know, whatever it is to get to the places that they need to be. So I love that approach.
Always.
So what was one of the most powerful lessons that you learned from Bob Proctor?
Oh gosh, just one.
Or two, whatever stands out.
Well, the main one is that we can't outperform our self-image. And we become what we think about all day long.
Wow. Dive into the self-image thing, because I think that ties a very much into visibility, right? And since the podcast is about visibility and we have to be visible, a lot of times that's, you know, ties right into that.
It's such a big subject, and something that's often really misunderstood is that we actually hold an image in our mind about who we are and how we show up. And we probably don't even realize that it's like life, you know, all along the timeline of life causes us to either accept I'm a good speller, I'm a bad driver. All of that combines. And one of the easiest ways to just help a person self-identify, and this is from Maxwell Maltz and Psycho-Cybernetics, is really to just assess and look at where has your business grown or income grown over the last 5 years, and you will notice there's a pattern. That you can change the pattern.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all in hindsight, right?
Always. But I always say this, once a person becomes aware, there really is no going back. You can choose to ignore it, but that doesn't do any good for anyone.
Yeah. And I know that you talk a lot about challenges as strengths, right? So how did that shift the perspective on how you show up in your business?
Every day, we should do something that scares the crap out of us. And if we play it safe, which is what our self-image actually really wants us to do, is just have like the same day. It's like Groundhog Day over and over and over again. It was just realizing that to change how I show up and who I am and who I help and all of that, is that you have to do different things. I had to do different things. And sometimes that's scary and sometimes it's comfortable, but it's realizing that I can still paint that picture of whatever it looks like.
Yeah. And do you feel like you took some of your, I'm assuming, some of your experiences and challenges and successes from the finance industry into coaching that's really helped to propel that side of your new growth in your business?
Oh, a lot. So in financial services, and to this day, it's still true, there's a small amount of women who work in the industry, in just in any role all across the industry. And when you're working in that, it does take a different personality to be able to navigate that and to become a person who sells for a profession within that world. I'm an introverted salesperson. And people hear that without really understanding. An introvert means that by the end of the day, because I love talking to people, the only way that I can re-energize is through quiet. But all of that helped me understand I'm a really good student. So when I first met Bob, it was, well, he seemed to know what he was talking about and he had really great results. And let me try that in an industry that I was always the first woman in a lot of the sales organizations. And you do have to chart your path or not. And so too many people leave the industry. And I bring that with the work that I do because to have a successful background in selling and sales, most people cringe at the word sales when it really is just serving. And so I just bring that. I'm not a sales coach. I don't ever pretend to tell somebody that's what I want to do. But it does help them understand you really can just create what you want and achieve enormous hurdles and challenges and get over them.
It's interesting you touched on being an introverted salesperson because I think sometimes there is a misconception on sales, specifically for people who may be more introverted. And I myself would identify as introverted. I like you said, I love talking to people. I like, going and doing things and like interacting and all of that stuff. But again, quiet is how I recharge. And I
Yes.
always, when I first started the business, I always thought like, oh, because I am this way, I may not be as good at sales. But it's a total shift in perspective and mindset to understand that you don't have to do sales the way that other people do or the ways that you see as, sleazy or whatever it might be. You have to do it from a nurturing service perspective. So I don't know if you want to touch on that a little bit more, but I can totally relate, and I think a lot of female entrepreneurs may also relate to that.
Oh, absolutely. So the first role that I had, so I'm from Chicago originally, was from a mutual fund company. And I was in my 20s. And when they interviewed, they said, look, we monitor and we look to see sales or research. And when they chose me to interview for sales, I thought, that's interesting. And, at 20 some years old, thankfully, I didn't have a filter of yes or no. And when they offered the job, my mom, because I, again, introverted, came out as shy as a youngster, and her question was, do they really know what they're doing because you're shy?
Oh
And I, in my 20s, thankfully asked the president before, because they were moving us across the country out to California. And I just asked him, I said, I just want to know from what you all observed, made you think that I was a perfect candidate for sales? And his simple sentence was, you have chutzpah.
I love that.
And I think that's what I want people to understand is that I didn't quite have an image of what I thought selling was at that point because it was early enough, though I was the person who didn't even want to return something because I was shy. And being a good student, I think, was helpful. And what I want people to understand, and I often ask, like, what's your perception of a salesperson in selling? Just like you said, car salesman or whatever. But even when I ended up on this side of the table doing this work, we can look at individuals in whatever space we hold in whatever profession and look at individuals and we go, we do not want to be like that because of our impression of what selling is. And it's to understand selling is serving, but you still have to ask for the sale.
That's true. And
All
it's
they have to.
important. Yeah, I mean, it's important to ask for the sale because if you have something that you offer that can help that other person, you have to have that transaction in order to start serving them, right?
You can't help anyone until they make that decision. And that, whatever the process is for someone, what we're doing is giving them enough information and data to make the decision if this is the right thing to serve them. And objections are not no, it just means a person doesn't understand the value or they can't see it yet to make a decision, yes or no. Nothing wrong with objections.
And if you look at it from that perspective, then you understand how to reframe your value or to bring value and or reposition your sales pitch, if you will. To make sure that they understand the value instead of it being that cringy, like, okay, now I'm going to tell you the price.
The one area that I encourage all of my clients is tell them up front. And I don't, it doesn't matter what industry, but to be able to say is like, look, we're just going to get to know each other. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. I did that as a financial advisor. And then if I think I can help you, I am going to ask you to join me in my journey or in my practice or coaching or whatever. But that gets it off the table. And then they relax and they go, oh, okay.
And they can already hear and listen and observe and understand without thinking, okay, I know once we get to the end of this, they're going to tell me, I've got to
Right.
commit or any of those things. So, yeah. I love that. That's a great approach.
It's fun. The funnest is when they think you're not going to ask them to be a client. Because, and it is, it's interesting. It's like it puts it on them in a sense. No, we worry. What if they don't like us? What if they, no, when you tell them if I think I'm a right fit and if, we seem to be a good fit, then I'm going to ask you to be a client.
That's awesome. Well, I want to talk about one of the quotes that I saw that you use, which is true success is the harmony of professional achievement and personal happiness. Can you talk about the professional achievement and personal happiness, how those intertwine with true success?
It can be even simplified even more when somebody believes that there's such a thing as work-life balance. And what that does is actually create a divide. It's like, do I like my work and not like my work? And if I don't like it, how fast can I get over to my life? We're here to have a wonderful life, which should involve I love the work that I do, which then doesn't make it feel like it's work. But it's coming back to some very simple question, which is what value do I provide with the people that interact with me? And when we love what we do, then personal, professional, all merges into one.
Why do you think some people try to keep it separate? Because some people will say, like, I've got my personality or my, who I am at work versus who I'm at home. Why do they separate them?
I think at the root of that is that they believe they can't be themselves, that we might need, or we don't feel like we are that person in the sense, and that when we get away from work, it's that we can breathe a sigh of relief. I'd rather that they just understand it's all about becoming an expert in their field. so that they know the value that they bring and show up as that person every day.
Yeah, accepting who they are and being true to themselves for sure.
Yes, we can be anything that we want. They just have to believe they can.
And so when you're coaching, let's say women specifically, they have these subconscious beliefs that keep them stuck. How do
Yes.
you help them like reprogram or reprocess how they show up to so they don't separate the two and they become, who they are and who they're meant to be?
Yeah. There's a lot of different ways to help with that. And I'll start with some really, I'm going to say simple, but simple and easy aren't always the same. So in the beginning, it's just to accept that we didn't program who we think we are. Most of our programming was from the ages of 0 to 9. Bruce Lipton says this wonderfully. Is that we didn't put the program in, but it is our job to change the program. I like to make it more of let's step away from where you might really feel the pain, whether it's work or income, and come to something that's less prevalent, or I'll just make light of it. And it's always like, do you think you're a good speller? Do you think you're a good driver? And it's like, but why do you think that? There's no real explanation. So some of the simplest is to ask what the beliefs a person has about where they're trying to get to, and especially if it is work. There's usually an income that they're trying to get to, and it's why do you believe you haven't done that yet? And it's always get it out of your head on a piece of paper, because if it stays here in our head, that's where the problem starts and ends, is in our head, because we make up stories all the time and we don't realize that we're doing it. But if we put it on paper and then ask the question, but is it true? That just starts them with the idea that, well, wait a second, I don't know why I think this is true. I used to tell the story that I did not like English. And it wasn't my favorite subject. I ended up going to school for journalism in Iowa because from Iowa to England because my roommate did, and I had to change my major from nuclear medicine to journalism.
Quite the shift.
As the person who doesn't think she's good at English, I all A's, I come back, and so I could wrap my brain around it and create that belief. I used to say, oh, it was the first year of the exchange program. They were probably easy on us. No, that wasn't true at all. Out of all the people that went there, my roommate and I were the only two students offered to stay and finish our degree there. But I told that story for a long time. And so if we can find those nuggets, then we can start to go, I probably have some more that aren't true. And there's a great framework. Actually, this is from David Bayer. He wrote a book called The Changed Mind, because a belief is just a decision. And it is, well, pick on sales. If I believe I'm horrible at sales, I'm not great at sales, that's the belief that I want to change. And the new one would be, is I'm great at sales. His framework is really simple. What evidence do I have that this new belief I'm great at sales is true? Which then ask the person to write down a couple reasons why. Now, they might be able to find some. Oh, I sold Girl Scout cookies. I was pretty good at that. I had this sales job. I actually sold something. Or Kim in my industry, who was a nurse and didn't have any experience in the coaching world, is highly successful and is multiple seven figures a year. If she can do it, I can do it. That's it. And then just keep working on that.
Yeah. I think one of the important things that you touched on among many, but the process of getting it out of your head, right? Because it's like I tell my children, like if you keep like scary thoughts in your head, they're just gonna get scarier, right? So you have to like speak it out, because then you it loses
Yes.
its control or its power. And so it's almost like there's so many correlations between that and just business and personal development that, you know, those thoughts don't serve you in your head, because we have millions of thoughts that run through our head, and we it, you know, we're fueling it, and maybe not in the right direction. So if you get it out and, you know, work through it, it really helps to frame it in the right direction.
I have a client, I have a 70-year-old client, and he said, like, he'll be talking in the car. And actually, what he does, and it's brilliant, is that as soon as we notice those thoughts, it's like, stop it. It really is just speaking it because, stop it, I choose to think this, which might be, I'm a bad driver. No, I'm not a bad driver. I don't have accidents. But if the person can just catch it, like you said, and talk like that and get it out, it's like, oh, stop it, that's not true. It's sort of like you have kids. Well, when you have teenagers and they're driving, you start making up all sorts of stories in your head.
Yes. Oh, goodness. So, one of the other things too that I've learned along my journey and from talking with other people is that it's almost like when you get to a point where you have fear, right? We talk about, you know, things that are in our head, either subconscious beliefs or fear of the next step. It's almost like repositioning your thought process to understand that that's almost like a transition point, right? So moving forward, even in fear, sometimes is how we can become successful, because our bodies, our minds are trying to hold us back from, you know, what they think is going to cause us harm. But
Yes.
really, these are points in your life that you have to overcome something or learn something in order to go on a new direction that may be the right path. So maybe, I don't know if you want to touch on that a little bit too.
Well, there's a great acronym for fear, false emotions appearing real. And I think it was Joseph Campbell who said, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure that you seek. It is an when I talk about it, especially in thinking about goals, I'm like, think of it like there's guards at your subconscious trying to keep you safe, and they don't want anyone to take a step out. But nothing of anything great has ever been accomplished by someone not willing to take a risk. And it's to understand, you can look at history and really ask yourself, why did somebody do something illogical? I mean, we go back to the Wright brothers because, you know, they were bicycle mechanics, and I cannot recall the name of the other general in Washington, D.C., who was also trying to make an airplane. Well, what logical reason did bicycle mechanics think that they could create an airplane? Or Steve Jobs to be able to create, you know, the computers as we have them today, when all the materials to make every invention that we have has been here? But it was the individual who's illogical and willing to be thought of as, you know, crazy. We're like, the crazies are the ones who actually give us the inventions that we need.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love, yeah, it's so fun to think about history and all of the challenges that people have overcome to get us where we are today. And if you just take that into perspective in your own life and your own journey, that should help you understand that you got to go through uncomfortable times in order to get to that success on the other side.
There's a great article by Ian Gray called The Common Denominator of Success. He was actually in the insurance industry. I want to say it was Prudential, but he decided to study what successful individuals did and then proceeded to write an article. I think back then it was a little book, but it's really not that long. And he used to be the commencement speaker at a lot of colleges. And somebody asked him one time how the individuals then learned to like to do what they didn't like to do, because it really is successful people do what unsuccessful people won't. And he said, I didn't tell you they learned to like it. I told you that they did it. You don't have to like doing any part of your role, But if it's to be successful, and if a person's in sales, it means you actually have to talk to people.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So let's wrap this up, and I'd love if you would give one piece of advice to our female listeners on a step that they can take to rediscover their joy, clarity, alignment, and maybe taking that first step in fear.
One thing, oh gosh, okay. Start believing in themselves like when they were a little kid, and start dreaming and imagining like they were when they were a little kid. That book, Psycho-Cybernetics, or Genevieve Brand would be good ones because it is about the power of our imagination. But I remind almost everyone as kids, and kids are great to watch, we should imagine like they do because they believe they can do anything. And if you can just have that childlike wonder and realize you can create anything, that's probably going to be the first step in the direction. And then I always say just find the mentor or an accountability group or the coach. It's crazy that we think we have to effort our way through everything when there's so much help out there. And I'll end it with this: the best investment that they can ever make is in themselves. Flat
100%.
out in themselves. Believe in themselves enough to make the investment in themselves.
Ellen, it has been amazing talking to you. You are a wealth of knowledge. I appreciate you being here as a guest. And if someone wants to get in touch with you, stay connected with you, how can they get in touch?
It's fairly easy. I'm on LinkedIn, Ellen Tyler. I have a website, ellentylercoaching.com, and my email and phone number is on LinkedIn. I make it really easy for them to find me.
Wonderful. Well, hopefully everyone listening has at least pulled out 1, 2, 10 golden nuggets from this conversation. And I encourage you to reach out to Ellen because, she's a wealth of knowledge, like I said, and somebody that can definitely help you propel you in that right direction if you are needing some coaching and success. So, Ellen, thank you again for being a guest.
Thanks, Tori. I love spreading the word.